this week on The Droids, we're back for another discussion of The Mandalorian, Chapter 12, The Siege. We're going to get into everything that happens on Nevarro. Back to Nevarro, back to some old friends, and the old friends here are with you in The Droids. We'll be with you this week. All that and more on The Droids. Welcome back to the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast with the vocal stylings of Sam. Got Ryan, Sam, and Mike.
Thank you.
Sam is pleased to have you here with these vocal stylings as well. But guys, I got to ask, anybody out there having any Mandalorian macaroons after this episode?
That little French boy, they didn't even try to, like, some macaroons in life are blue. Like, it wasn't even, they didn't try to change anything.
Yeah, I know that was. Well, if you're
I
making them from.
I guess these are macarons.
These are macarons, not macaroons.
Right.
True. I mean, I guess I took 12 years of French. Maybe I should.
I'll be honest. I prefer macaroons over macarons.
Really?
The coconut. Oh, the coconut macaroon? You betcha, baby.
No, I'm a big macaron guy. Although, I think, well, I don't know if Rachel likes macaroons. I know that she's not wild about macarons, so I was going to say she'd agree with you, but I don't know. I'm not her.
I don't find the flavor in macarons complex enough. It's just sweet. I don't. It's not complex enough.
How do we all feel about Emmanuel Macron? Anybody?
No? Is that a sports thing?
No, that's
the French president.
The president of France, right. Yeah, the president, the freedom president, I believe is what they'd call him in 2002. The freedom president.
Yes, indeed. In 2002, when we traveled back to watch this episode of The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Follow us across social, you know, of course, Droids Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, YouTube Droids Pod. Check out that playthrough, Fallen Order. You don't want to miss it. DroidsPod at gmail.com. And Droids Pod on TikTok. Do we have any content up there yet? No, but will we? Maybe. Droids Pod on TikTok, give it a shot.
Is it since we did a TikTok, is the next step in OnlyFans? Do we start a Droids OnlyFans?
It's a Parlor. We're doing a Parlor next.
Is that where all the alt-right people are going?
Yep.
Parlor?
There's a lot of Star Wars fans.
Honestly, I would say we'd probably hit a pretty big chunk of the fan base on there.
Yeah, certainly maybe we should. Are we going to pivot?
Certainly all of Gina Carano's fans.
Whoa, oh, God. That's true. That's very true. Let's, you know, I was delving into it. I was watching this episode. I was thinking about her in that way, and I was like, put it out of your mind. Just watch the episode. Don't think about the way she's acting.
Think
about
how she's a terrible actress.
Yeah, think about that. Think about how bad she is as an
actress.
I have to tell you.
Season one, I really was like, I thought you guys were going real hard on, or at least you, Mike, because I remember you distinctly, like, kind of, you know, dinging her for her acting. And
Mike, that's awful.
Gotta be honest. I defended her. I was like, she's good. She's good for what this is. She's perfect. Like, she's having fun. I like it. Man.
DeLorean.
They need to get a coach on that set. This is a rough performance. I was not into the acting this week.
It sounds like they got to get Dr. Fauci on that set because she refuses to wear masks.
You're talking about Cara Dune or?
I'm talking about Gina Carano, who openly on social media has been talking about how it's infringing on her freedom to wear a mask. It's terrible. It's awful. Wear a mask, everybody.
Ryan,
everybody
wear
your mask. I
completely agree with you. I was just trying to keep it light and not dive too much into her.
Well, listen,
musings.
I want to do a PSA here and say to everybody, in case you haven't heard, it's a good idea to wear your masks. You should do it.
Can I wear a Mandalorian mask without a mask under it? Without, like, an actual face covering mask? Can I just wear a Mandalorian mask?
I mean, I'm not a medical professional, but I'm going to say wear both.
I would think both.
Wear both.
I was doing a bit of a bit there, but I figured I thought you would get the right answer that it needed both.
Yeah, you need both. Anyway. Everybody wear your masks. Stay safe and healthy out there. Anyway, so this episode of The Mandalorian, I thought it was great.
Well, so I do want to say what Sam just talked about is, like, I don't know that I've watched a more lifeless set of scenes in anything in the last like 10 years. And I don't mean that to say that this episode was terrible. I just mean that like we need somebody else in there with Gina and Carl Weathers. And Carl, I love you. I think you're great. I don't think maybe you should have been directing this one. No offense. And Gina Carano needs an acting coach like Sam said.
This is interesting. Wow, how the turntables.
Ryan, my intro to this episode, I had a thing ready if I was the first to talk. And instead, right. What I did was I sang the theme song, which was dumb because I thought that because I was going to say, we've certainly reached the middle of this season, which is the best thing I could say. Although, well, I have good stuff from this episode, but this was not a hit for me.
No,
I thought it was great. This is awesome. Wow.
But the funny thing to me is that it's still eons better than Jake Cannavale's episode. I'm just saying, in the grand scope of this series,
Mike, I'm starting to moveon.org petition for you.
I don't want to focus on just Cannavale, even though I'm making the joke. I want to say that episode is the low point to me of the series, and this one was feeling like it was getting that low, though I still enjoyed the episode.
Wow.
But not nearly as bad as that.
I'm shocked, but you know, yeah. So Gina Carano's really bad. Carl Weathers, who seems, based on nothing that I know other than his roles and his Instagram, he seems like a lovely man.
And he's great as Apollo Creed. I love Apollo Creed.
Sure, and he's getting a stew going, and that's great. And
I got a stew.
And I don't think this episode was badly directed in any way. I do think that he is miscast. As we know from deliveries of lines like, as you can see, I am also alive.
Well, that's the dialogue there, too.
Yeah, well, don't get me started on Favreau, but...
Well, that's the biggest part of the lifelessness of this episode, other than the Carano acting, was the dialogue. The dialogue was... This is the worst the dialogue has been in the show, I thought.
This dialogue was very... Okay, let's... We're getting into the minutia. Let's back up and just... So... Last week, we ended with, the Mandalorian helping other Mandalorians, kind of expanding that world of, like, the different sects of, you know, the tribe of Mandalore, whatever you call it. And he got the directive that in order to continue his quest, he needed to seek out Ahsoka Tano on some system.
Boca Ratano.
And we...
Do a recap. Everybody's watching it. If they're listening to this episode, they've watched it.
So
also, it's the same episode that we've seen five times. He shows up somewhere, and they're like, "While you're here."
So this episode, it's continuing the season two trend of like, "Hey, you're on a mission, but you're getting waylaid," and we end up with like none of that story continuing, which I would be fine with if we just had like a little more to this one. Like this one didn't. This one felt very, what am I trying to say?
They didn't try very hard to give him a reason. He's like, yeah, okay. You know, like, I get it if we're going to do this all the time and he's going to get waylaid. I like the way you say that, Sam. But it's like this one, they're just like, okay, I guess I'll go along for the ride. It's like at least have him be resistant. At least have a scene of like, I've got to get him to the Jedi. I've got to get this child back. Instead, it's just, oh, I'm going. Sure. No problem.
Here's my thoughts on this
episode. These are his friends.
To me, this episode was the same as last week's episode, except one notable difference, which is that there were elements that were mysterious and seemed to move the overall story forward. So, and also visually, I thought it was more interesting. I thought the action scenes were better and things like that. But I think last week was like really treading water. And at least in this, we had some reveals that I thought were exciting. I will say I was very disappointed. This is episode 4, which means that my prediction was not correct in the Ahsoka Tano.
I was wondering if you were going to own up to that. I didn't want to say it before you had ample
opportunity. I don't blame myself. I blame Favreau. I blame John Favreau. And I don't mean John Favreau, the director. I mean Obama's former speechwriter. I blame him on this.
Ooh, you got to blame him. Yeah, I really do. He's just that the Pod Save America has really been taken.
Listen, love it or leave it. It's a good show. But I thought that the reveal that we'll talk about, which potentially my wife potentially ruined for Mike, although I don't really know. Okay, so did anyone else think that they were like they were tying Snoke into this?
Yeah. I mean, so I mean, of course I did, because your wonderful wife told me that ahead of the episode, so there was no other way I could think about it.
You don't have to say that, Mike. You don't have to call her that.
I mean, I find her delightful.
You know, you don't have to call her my wife.
Oh, did you want to do that in the Borat voice?
She's delightful. I'll give you another chance. I love you, baby. I love you, baby. If you're listening, I love you.
Oh boy.
Okay. I did think. My initial thought was that it was like a Snoke tie-in, and then I was like just vaguely unsure. I was like, I don't know, this could kind of be like any sort of, you know, Jedi Force user harvesting plot.
This could be any
thing.
Growing something in a tube kind of thing.
Yeah, but we've really only seen that the one time, huh? It was sort of like invented out of thin air for that final series.
Somehow they're growing
movies.
Snokes in tubes,
which means they're growing Palpatines in tubes.
So, I thought it was. I was like, oh, it's Snokes. They're tying it in to the sequel trilogy.
Yeah,
but now I'm wondering, because the end it made it seem like they were building like some kind of Sith troopers. And then I didn't know if it was Snoke anymore.
No, I still thought it was Snoke, but the Sith troopers were... I thought they were like droid death troopers is what they looked like.
Did we think it was definitely Snoke, or did we think it might have been like Emperor clones?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Well, so I don't even... Look, The Rise of Skywalker is so muddled in my mind that I don't know
how
to take...
All right,
I don't know how to read any of this.
They're different, and
If it's Snoke, it's still Palpatine. So they're trying to bring back the Emperor through the vessel of Snoke.
I think they make the Emperor, and the Emperor makes Snoke. I think we know that the Emperor made Snoke, you know? I think we know that. I still haven't watched that movie a second time. I'll never watch it again.
Okay, here's the conundrum, because this is the big part of the episode, right? Like, it's like...
You mean
I thought
it's
this
the part that
the
matters
best.
Versus the rest?
Yeah,
of...
I mean, other than that, it's just them shooting stormtroopers. So,
no, I think the big part of the only good part of the episode is the flying stuff. That's what I thought.
Yeah, that was great.
I thought it was okay. I think the thing that killed it was that's some flying, Mando. And then at the end, when the three of them are like cheering, that cheering was just like somebody helped them act.
Oh my god! Oh my god!
Cheering.
It was so embarrassing. Although I do love Horatio Sands.
I love Horatio Sands. But this is my problem with... Sorry, I know you're getting to something, Ryan, but this is my problem with the Carl Weathers directing. Is like, we don't need a full body shot for everybody. Not everybody looks great in a full body shot. I was really not great for that Rebel pilot walking through town. Like, give us a medium. Just let's send the medium shot. I don't know what we're doing in this full body shots for a lot of the episode. No, seriously, it was jarring because you just don't see shows do that.
Mm-hmm.
Or movies. Because it's part of the costuming is like, hey, the costume looks great in some areas and doesn't look great in others. Maybe don't show the full body.
Yeah.
It sort of takes you out of it because you're like, oh, yeah, I guess you do have some overweight heroes. And, you know, no problems with weight, but it's just like the way it just didn't look flattering.
I think the worst part for me was Gina Carano, like, putting her fists in the air when the Mandalorian's flying away. That has nothing to do with the full body shot. That has to do with the performance. I don't know, like, why that got passed. But on to the Snoke. The
Snoke of it all.
So, okay, so if they're trying to tie this into the sequel trilogy,
are you talking about are you talking about a Snoke Atano?
I'm talking about a Snoke Atano Ren Bow.
I'm sorry. Ryan's been trying to say this for 10 minutes. Our listeners are dropping like flies.
It seems like they're going to great lengths to have this show kind of exist within the Filoniverse, which is great. They have not acknowledged kind of the sequel trilogy yet. So if they're trying to tie that in, that's very interesting, because they're trying to... They're either showing that they're building Snokes, that crossed my mind. They're showing how maybe they got all of those Sith disciples that Palpatine has. That was also interesting to me.
I don't want to hear that as part of the story that they care about to write.
Or it's this like completely separate thing where they're making like Sith troopers using the blood of the child because he has a bunch of midichlorians and they're trying to kind of infuse them into these clone-ish things. The issue with that one, though, is that because this takes place before the sequel trilogy and we've seen the sequel trilogy, the tension is kind of gone because we know that that doesn't work because we don't see any Sith troopers. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that kind of presents this conundrum for me.
I don't. I get what you're saying, yes, but I don't think it means it doesn't work. I think what it means is that if it works, it's going to be an arc for the Mandalorian and not something that relies on the movies to resolve. Do you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Like, there's a lot of stuff in the Clone Wars that we don't see. Like, if you watch the Clone Wars TV show, there's a lot of stuff in there that we don't see, you know, in the...
come to fruition in episode three.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you gotta leave these guys some sandbox to play in. And, you know, certainly Filoni. Like, I don't know. That didn't inherently bother me. I would be more annoyed, I think... I don't like the Rise of Skywalker, so I don't want it to tie to that at all.
Yeah, well, that's
do you know what I mean?
Too.
Like, I kind of don't care what else they do with it. Like, if they want to, like, make up other stuff, and I don't know.
I find it engaging if they're trying to tie it all in, regardless of how we feel about the Rise of Skywalker. Obviously, it's not a movie I'm a fan of at all. But
that's fair.
But if they're trying, you know, the same way that the new kind of the Disney Star Wars and Episode 8 especially trying to tie in the prequels to kind of legitimize them in a way, even though people didn't like them. Obviously I do. I'm a prequel apologist, but I think that there is an interesting thing that taking something that people may not be a fan of and including it into something that they are a fan of to make it, you know, seem more legitimate in canon.
Well,
what I'm trying to say is saga saved.
Saga saved. No, I think that's a fair point. Like it's almost again, are they going to go and retcon and make it better than what it was originally in Rise of Skywalker? And maybe they can. I mean, I don't want to be reminded of it, but maybe they can do that.
I mean, they can't make it worse.
They should have a trigger warning at the beginning that it involves things that may have something to do with the Rise of Skywalker.
They should. Yeah, I don't think they can make it worse. In most cases, I would say, oh, don't play around. You could make it worse. But in this, not so much. But it did seem, as you were talking about, Ryan, the kind of alluding to what we will probably get to with the First Order, is there were certainly parts of this episode that hinted at that. Not only the way that the rest of the Empire was operating, but then... even the New Republic X-Wing pilot was kind of hinting that there was, you know, more we need to get in control out here in the Outer Rim, or these factions might lead to something worse.
When we saw I think it was like the shot when we saw, it was late in the episode, we saw like the Imperial commander talking to like the spy who planted a tracker on the Razor Crest, and like, then she walks through like a fully functioning
Star Destroyer.
Star Destroyer, thank you. I was like, Star Cruiser? Star Destroyer. That was very much to me. I was like, this is the first time, maybe since The Force Awakens, where I've like bought into the idea of like, oh, this is how they come back. Because like, that's always like the big leap, and I always accepted the leap as presented in The Force Awakens, but the big leap in The Force Awakens is like, how's there a First Order? Like, didn't we win? Yeah. You know? Yep. Yep. And this is like, that's like one of the great things that I think they are doing in terms of the tie-in, Ryan, like in terms of tie-in that I can really get behind, is like just this idea of like, oh no, we're seeing some of those, you know, the Star Destroyers that's fully operational, fully crewed, and like, it's... I mean, you know, it's hard not to tie it to like present day politics, where you just like wonder, you know, how long are people going to hang on? How long are people going to, you know, serve the master that lost, you know?
Well, Sam, you know, you think that the Emperor is defeated, but you forget that he's got 73 million people out there and 73 million imps, as they call them, a Mandalorian, ready to hold the fort and find a way to bring him back.
Exactly.
Can we talk about how clunky that scene is where everybody's just running through the same hallway five times?
Yeah.
It's very... It's, yeah, it's like...
I was like, are they trying to be funny that they just keep showing people run through a hallway, shoot stormtroopers, then the other person does it, then the next person does it?
Yeah. That's part of what
and
I
then
was
it's
talking
like
about.
They, right? And then it's like they flip the door and like reset, so it's like a new hallway.
Yeah, they clearly built three hallways, like one L shape and two like straight ones.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was funny to me too. I liked the Baby Yoda stuff. I actually liked that this episode. So we've hit pretty hard on the featured cast, but I actually liked that this episode did feature like people we knew, but like not the Mando. Like the Mandalorian was like, he was kind of in the beginning and then not in a big chunk of the episode. And
he literally flies away.
I liked that, actually. I thought, like, this is fun. This feels a little bit Star Wars. And I would almost be interested in this kind of a show where you have more of an ensemble, more of a you know, multiple storylines going on of people we can follow. Like, maybe we get that with Ahsoka Tano, and that would be dope if we had, like, some branching paths
and some quality.
Don't get me wrong, I like the Mandalorian, I like the core storyline, right? But I thought that was good. I really liked the actual aerial combat that we got. Mm-hmm. It was limited, but I thought that was really cool when the TIE fighters got involved. Like the chase sequence itself I thought was pretty exciting, like just like the canyon yeah. chase. I was like, this looks good. This is exciting. You know, I really yeah. felt the like slowness and weight of that gun that they were limited by, you know.
Well, but Sam, I liked all of that and was feeling great. The moments that took me out of it were like, you want to come back here and try this thing? Like, what is that? Why are you writing?
Well, that's a man whose movies were in the 80s. You know, that's an 80s line.
But that's an 80s line. That's an 80s line that you've heard 1,000 times. It felt like, and also when they're up higher on the installation, where she's like, "You want an invitation? Get in!"
Oh, that really stuck out to me as well. That I was like, I wonder how many times that line has been written in a script.
That one stuck out to me. The other one actually didn't as much, and I think. I agree. Let me back up. This was definitely, like, if not the weakest, like one of the weakest written episodes yet. And the writing was, like, overall pretty poor. It didn't bother me. Like, there was a lot of it that felt like, in some ways those rote 80s actioner like lines sort of fit into the vibe of the same way that you have Han Solo, like, you know, hit the Falcon to like get it started, you know, the same way, like that it's those touchstones of like, this is a reality we can identify with, this feels like a lived in world. I was like, oh, they have these corny lines almost. I don't know. Yeah. but sometimes that one, are you waiting for an invitation? That was rough.
Bring back the Moof Milker. If you want to go corny, like, go all in on the corny. Do something that's a little different. When I heard Moof Milker the first time, I was like, but then now it's grown on me. And rather than just repeating something, this episode also suffered from not knowing how to write comedic moments. You know, it felt like there were several points where you have Horatio Sands there. You need a little bit of comic relief. And things kind of sat there silently. And the moment where I think of it first is when they get to the door and the Mandalorian flies off, is like there's a beat where the three of them are sitting there and you're just waiting for Horatio Sands or somebody to have some sort of quip about him flying away and leaving them for potentially dead, and there's nothing. And then the timing on when the larger Imperial vehicle destroys his speeder, it just felt off. Like, it felt like it should have been right away and it should have been something funnier. Maybe that's just what I wanted, but I just, I was surprised.
The second thing you mentioned, I thought the timing was definitely off. I did think they had some good, there was some good comedy. Like when he was getting out of the speed, when they were like making him get out of the speeder to come like get the door. And he was like, I don't really like leaving my speeder parked here. You know, I'm just saying like, that was some good, like, and that might've been pure improv, or it might've been like sort of practiced like improv and like shot like that. But like that felt to me like the kind of thing you were maybe describing that you're looking for, and I won't speak for you, but that's how
did that felt better, and I think maybe that's part of the expectation of what I had for the rest of the episode was like, all right, here's what we got, here's Horatio and his character doing this, so I'm gonna feel more of that, and then those moments where it felt like he would come in and he didn't, it was really stark.
Did we know that his character was coming back, or was that a surprise to everybody else?
Well, we saw him in the trailer. I mean, the edge of his head.
Oh, I didn't. Okay, so it was a surprise to me, and it maybe shouldn't have been, but okay.
Yeah.
I liked when he got scared and he like expelled all of that mist.
That was good.
I thought that was a nice little touch.
That was fun.
I don't know. I like this episode more than you guys seem to, but I think I was. I think I was really engaged by the Snoke aspect of it. There was the way that the Mandalorian says, I don't like this, really compelled me. When they were looking at them and they were talking about... Like, it gave this weight to it. And that's like a Pedro Pascal thing, is that he's really good at the voice work in this. And maybe some of the body work. I don't know. John Wayne's grandson is doing fine. But the way he delivered it just really gave a weight to it. That he felt like there was something very wrong happening. And, you know, it finally gives us some context for the child in terms of, you know, we kind of had an idea that this is what they were doing with it. But I thought that it was compelling enough to add another mystery to the show.
Absolutely. I loved all of that. That, as much as I didn't want to think about Snoke, I was very much on board with, let's explore this mystery. Let's learn more about the cloning guy who was Werner Herzog's counterpart in the first season, and I liked his reappearance. I liked learning all of that. I liked seeing what Moff Gideon was up to at the end. It felt like it was propelling, as you said. It felt like it was moving things forward, and that was great. I just wish that the rest of it would have been more interesting, which is probably, it seems like, what you felt like last week, Ryan. We're just kind of flipped on that.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I was thinking as this episode was coming to the close is it so much felt ineffectual to me in this episode, except, you know, that mystery, that I was like, boy, I love special effects, because those special effects were cool. Like what they showed in that chase with the speeder bikes and the Imperial vehicle, and then even the space battle with the TIE fighters, that all looked great. And that was awesome. And until I thought a little bit more about the mystery, I was like, I think the special effects were the only thing I liked about this episode, but now I'll add the mystery to that.
I like the, when the one speeder bike like wrecked the other speeder bike, like right at the beginning of that chase, that was like a very funny comedic beat to me, where it's just like, my God, these Imperials are like still so stupid. You know, like it's like, no wonder they lost to a ragtag group of rebels. You know, like, I really liked that.
I continue to enjoy the parenting moments, and Sam, you might feel this way as well.
Oh, the spit up was very funny.
That was very funny.
It was very cute, and I love that he was doing like a roller coaster thing throughout it, and then the spit up was great, but also at the beginning, just the communication. No, the red. No, not the blue. Back in the red. No, put the red in where the blue was. I just thought that was
the baby
wonderful.
Groot moment.
Yeah, it was a baby Groot moment, but it was a real all like young kids parent conversation. I thought it was very funny.
So I talked about like obviously like just sort of like the aerial combat and stuff, but the I think the child moments in this worked maybe better for me than they have since episode one of this season, when Ryan, your moment when he like closes his bassinet like thing, like
pram.
The moments in this episode where we saw, you know, him interacting with the other kids, when we saw Mandalorian interacting with him both at the beginning and the end of the episode, like that was some of the best stuff that made me, kind of reminded me why I like why I love the child so much. Like other than, because I think sometimes it just leans really heavily into like, aw, cute, you know. And this was like a little bit more personality, a little bit more humanity, a little bit more like, no, these are like real things that kids do. These are real things that like we see how he's impacting our Mandalorian, you know, and like how Din Djarin nailed it. One try. Whoa. Nailed it in one. Ryan, just edit that so that I said it perfectly the first time. Like how that's how the child's like, you know, impacting his life. I just really like that. It was good.
Yeah, that's, I feel similarly. I did like him more in episode two maybe than you did, Sam.
The eggs. Yeah.
I like that. I mean, I wasn't offended. I enjoyed it quite much.
I was too busy being offended to enjoy it.
I think the other moment with the child where he was in the classroom was fun to me. I like that back and forth. I like, we knew where it was going, that he would steal the cookies, but it was still pleasant. And like, I sometimes I like, the expected is pretty gratifying too.
The other kids reacting to him was nice. Yeah. And that was something we hadn't seen since maybe episode four of season one, you know, where, when he's on the planet, the watery, swampy planet, whatever, you know, where it's like, oh, right, if he were to have the chance to be with people his own age and, like, have a normal, non-wartime upbringing, you know, he'd be fun, that kind of thing. I don't know. I had fun with the episode. I liked it. I think I was also, honestly, like, I'm not so surprised that they held off on revealing Ahsoka Tano, but I do think, like, with such a strong setup at the end of the previous episode, it was a letdown that we didn't get there. Like, the other episodes have at least...
That's always frustrating.
Like, the other episodes where he's been waylaid in his quest have at least, like, gotten you to the point that was promised, right? Like, they just usually, like, tease it right at the end, you know? And this was like, we're not even getting there. Like, oh, okay. Fine.
Yeah, there's something always... I mean, it's when it's week to week, it's more frustrating because we're waiting for it. And I'm sure if we watched it again, it wouldn't be as frustrating. You know, like if we watched it all at once.
Probably true.
Because, you know, like at this point, I just want to see what Ahsoka Tano looks like. Like, I just want to see how they do this in live action and like how, like, Rosario Dawson's take on it. So I'm impatient about that. But the thing I'm afraid of is that we'll meet Ahsoka and like in like the last shot of the last episode. That would be extremely frustrating to me.
I think we're headed that way.
Yeah, probably.
I think they also
really? You think we'll go that way? Like, you don't think you think like he won't find her next week also?
No.
No, and I think the Monster of the Week kind of format is very charming to me, and I do like it. It's like refreshing to have a show like this. But at the same time, there is this piece of it where they don't even find, like Mike, how you said that he wasn't even reluctant this time. Mm-hmm. They're not finding new ways to introduce it. He literally just arrives somewhere and they say, since you're here, let's do this. And then they do it. There's no like creativity in terms of how the
I'm gonna
missions
push back.
Come
wait,
around.
Wait. I if you both felt that, I think that's completely valid. I felt like this week they almost did a, there was like a, they did a better job of it than last week. Because this week it was like his ship was destroyed. He needed repairs. Last week it was like the Mandalorians that he found like asked him to do something and he was like, no. And then they like showed up and like blasted some fools. And then they were like, we need you to do the thing. And he was like, okay. You know, it was like, I guess, I don't know. I think it's equal, like between the 2 weeks, maybe.
Even though I liked this week's episode more, it was less compelling this time that they literally said, while you're here, let's do this. And he goes, okay. Like, but that's, at least last time there was like some high stakes thing. He felt like he owed them because they helped him and things like that. But this was literally, like, we're doing this thing and you have to wait for your ship, so you might as well come along.
Well, except that these were... So this is, again, I think this worked for me again, we're getting into like the weeds on this one specific thing, but I'm like,
hey man, it's a podcast.
But like that worked for me because I was like, he has a history with these people. Like these are the people he would help. Like these aren't strangers that he's like compelled to help because like he's a Mandalorian. He can like refuse to help people and like go in his own way and like not have an issue. But like these are people that stood up for him last season and that like defended him. And so it's like, yeah, he'd probably hang around and be like, great, while you're fixing the ship, yeah, I'll go in on this one.
Well, isn't it that just something as simple as, I need you here, Mando, which I think he sort of did, but they could have done it better where it's like, I'm calling in a favor or we're friends now, just some more heart to heart. And that was part of what this episode was missing to me. Other than Baby Yoda in the classroom, there was nothing that tugged at my heartstrings, you know, and not that every episode has to, but I felt like the rest of it was pretty cold.
I can give you that. Sure.
You know, and maybe, again, the part of that is the dialogue and performance. You know, just I didn't really feel like anyone was that excited by him taking out the ties because that didn't seem real and didn't seem like he was in any real danger. Whereas,
wait, they were so excited, Mike. They were like cheering.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Yeah, that was great. But, you know, whereas I felt the danger in the season one finale when he's on the TIE fighter and he's flying around outside. I mean, that was something new we hadn't seen before, but it's like, I don't know what's going to happen. Like, what is this situation? How can he get out of this? How is he going to be okay as he's flying around on a TIE? Whereas this was like, yeah, he's going to pick him off. I just know he's picking him off. It didn't seem like there was any real drama in that.
I liked the way he got the last one. I liked like the game of chicken with him just like dive bombing and like spiraling. That was pretty rad.
Well, I mean, that pretty much covers the entire episode. I don't know that there's anything else that we
missed.
Yeah,
we didn't have a ton. There's not a lot to talk about with this one. That maybe that's the most damning thing about it, you know, is that, like, you can kind of cover it really quick. I guess, it was, you know, it's cool that there's these Imperial outposts. Like, the way they're laying the groundwork for the leftover Imperials to actually be, like, a force to be reckoned with is nice and does add some connective tissue leading into the sequel trilogy. And I dig that.
It also made it a little bit easier to understand why these guys are still manning their posts, why these troopers are still doing their job. Cause you kind of think like they're defeated, you know, it's over. Why are they out there walking around talking about TK421 or, you know, the T-1000, whatever it is. But then you realize that, you know, they do still think that the Empire exists. Like they don't think that it's over. And they're out there marching a million strong.
They're still counting the votes. They're still counting the votes.
They're counting them. I do want to ask, and this is completely a Mike Hot and Fresh, if I'm going to steal it from Chris. If he's
Whoa.
Not. I believe that's copyrighted. You owe Chris a quarter every time you say it.
Honestly, no problem. If Chris has to show up for the episode to collect.
And this is not a hot and fresh about the actual story. It's a hot and fresh about how it's made. This is an episode where Favreau said, I'm doing this one on my own. You know, I'm writing this myself. And there's other episodes where Favreau gets the main writing credit at the end of the episode, but he works with other people and they come up with the story together. And I think at times he also says, no, I'm doing this one on my own. And this one felt like that because I don't think the dialogue is nearly as bad in other episodes of the series. And that's, I have nothing to base that on than my own intuition, which is probably way off base, and I don't know enough about the industry to really judge, and Favreau has made so much more entertainment that has pleased so many more people.
Don't back off this. This is a hot and fresh. This isn't this. You don't mollycoddle a hot and fresh.
Yeah, no.
All right? Pan down.
This isn't Mike's backpedaling corner.
Pan down. It's the set of the Lion King, and Favs goes, this one's mine. Don't touch it, or you don't get the series.
I fair enough.
The set of the Lion King. I chose the entirely CG movie.
I think John Favreau is a very good filmmaker who has made some wonderful films that I am a big fan of. I have a coin that he gave me once. I don't know if you've heard, but at the same time, I don't think that. How do I say this diplomatically? Whatever, I'll call it a hot and fresh, so I don't have to say it diplomatically. Here's a hot and fresh. I don't think that he knows what his limits are or where his skill set lies. And I don't, based on what he's what he's taken on in his career, it seems like he's a little bit of a low-key egomaniac.
Yeah.
And I think that that shows in things like this, which is that, like you said, it's just like he'll write the... I think he has a writing credit on almost every episode. So he was just like, I'll write the entire series myself. Jon Favreau isn't like known as a writer. No. I understand he wrote Swingers. Cool. What a well-written movie, right? But like... that's a joke. If anyone hasn't seen Swingers, it's like the fact that he got his claim to fame from writing Swingers is insane. But it's... I don't think that like he's the person that should write an entire series of television. I just don't think that's where his his skills lie.
But you have to feel like he's gotten other help because we these other episodes haven't been there.
Filoni is like a major creative force in this show.
Yeah, so I
guess like I just say like go make Iron Man and then come talk to me, you know?
Okay. On my way.
I'm kidding. I'm just saying that's like seems to be what happened with his relationship with Disney, you know? Yeah. Like Iron Man 2 was like considered a major like kind I don't know if I'm going to totally back off. I'm sure it wasn't a bomb. I'm sure it made crazy money. But it was they didn't bring him back for 3 and they didn't bring him on to direct Avengers, which was like a lot of people's predictions. It was like, "Oh, this guy launched it. This guy gets it. He's going to do Avengers." And so like it's clear that whatever went down with Iron Man 2 was kind of like, you know, the shine was off, right?
Yeah, but it wasn't, though, because then they gave him Jungle Book and The Lion King.
This is what I'm saying. So somehow, this guy made like one crazy good, super awesome movie that launched the literal money factory for Disney. And maybe that's what gets you, you know. I want to write every episode of a series. Okay, John.
The fact of the matter is that Jon Favreau has directed just as many fine movies, like pretty bad to fine movies, as he has like really good movies, which is fair. I mean, every filmmaker kind of has a different, you know, like not every filmmaker makes a great movie every time. Even the best ones, they make a stinker or two. But like, The Lion King was not a good movie. The Jungle Book was a good movie. Chef, not a good movie. Like, it's Cowboys and Aliens, not a good movie. Iron Man 2, not a good movie. So it's like, he obviously has his skills. I'm not dismissing Jon Favreau. He's done a lot for us. He launched the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And, you know, he invented single-handedly the technology to make Lion King. But I think that a lot of the cracks start to show in terms of his abilities as a writer arise in this show. And this is someone who liked this episode fine. But I just think that he may be a better like helmer in terms of like an exec producer, or like kind of someone who kind of is a guiding force than the actual person who sits down at the computer to write it.
Which do you think, I mean, there had to be some conversation that, hey, look, we've got a lot of great writers here around Lucasfilm, John. You know, we're so excited that you want to do this series. And do you think he said, no, I have to write most of it? Because I just, the conversations in Lucasfilm where they're willing to sacrifice some things shock me. You know, it doesn't seem like Kathleen Kennedy would be like, all right, yeah, sure, if we get about, you know, something's like half written, that's cool.
I think
cool.
They're going with like sure bets, and I think that Jon Favreau seems like a sure bet.
That's fair. It's very good. That's fair, and I guess JJ is a sure bet.
Yeah, and it's like I understand that they fired half of their directors, but, I think at this point they're like, well, you know, Favreau is a brand, and like we know he can do it.
Yeah.
And to be fair, he is doing it. He is delivering. It you know, we can like pick it apart, but I still wake up every Friday excited to watch The Mandalorian.
Oh, yeah.
So
I wake up every Friday morning, I get excited, I download it on my iPad, I get in my car, and then I sit in the cold for 90 minutes.
So you can watch it 4 times over, 3 times over.
But yeah, like, his writing credits include Swingers, Maid, Couples Retreat, and Chef. Like,
oh boy.
Okay. It's like all of the movies that are his best movies he did not write.
Which I think he writes like 6 of 8 episodes this season, or all of them.
He's written, of the 12 episodes we've seen so far, he's written 10 of them.
Has Whoa, he? Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I
didn't
realize
that. Did he write the
finale? What's that?
Did he write the finale? Season one?
Yes.
I thought Taika... Wait, didn't Taika write it? Taika just directed it?
No, he directed it.
Well, I got to give him credit, because that... I do feel like the writing at the end of season one was quite strong.
It still annoys me that it just says at the end of the... At the credits, created by Jon Favreau.
I know. I won't get over that either.
That's insane.
Well, yeah. I think that pretty much does it. Though, for this episode, I will say we are planning to review the Star Wars Holiday Lego Special. I think some of us have dipped our toe in, but we're planning to watch it all together as the droids. So we'll get a episode out about that in the next few weeks. But we'll keep on going on the Mando train. I think we're excited to see Ahsoka pretty soon.
We're
hopefully,
excited to see
are we all are we all still burning through Clone Wars?
I've been making my way through. It's great.
I'm halfway through season five, and actually, I'm at an episode in season five where I'm going to get my second appearance of Bo-Katan. So I think I'm going to get some more context for what we saw last week in the Mando. So,
what was it?
By the way,
Ryan?
Those Mortis episodes. Whoa,
they're the best. Oh my
so
god,
cool.
So freaking cool.
The Dathomir episodes too.
It's
amazing.
It's crazy what like at some point you really feel, or I this is my interpretation. I really feel like Filoni like cashes the check. You know, it's like he's earned all this trust in the first few seasons of like shepherding and stewarding the content. Oh my god! Like when the Dathomir episodes, the Mortis stuff, like when there's just stuff that he starts doing. He does some stuff with the clones. He does a whole like arc of like clones under a general that's like really ruthless. And I mean, it's just like this guy's going for broke, and every single like risk he takes pays off. It's so good. I love it. I'm loving it.
It's great.
I'm in beginning of season four. I just finished the Civil War on Mon Cala.
Yes.
Great.
Really
great,
enjoyed those episodes.
Really visually, I was like, that was to me like where I was like, they stepped it up. They stepped up the production value, the animation, the visuals. So rad.
It's exciting, and it's exciting even though I know a lot of where it's going, because we all have read a little bit or seen a little bit about what happens with the story in terms of the actual series, not just where it goes in the original trilogy. Mm-hmm. It just continues to be like, I get it. Why Favreau, as you pointed out so well, Ryan, being the known quantity, if you gave it to Filoni and said, do the Mandalorian series and then have a bunch of other directors direct it, I feel like they could have been successful still, but... You want to kick off a new streaming platform with a huge Star Wars series that's never been done before. Proven entity, better way to go. Mm-hmm. Long run, Filoni should do it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Well, all right. That's going to do it for the Droids You're Looking For Star Wars podcast. Look forward to talking more. Follow us on all the social networks. That TikTok's out there, Droids Pod. I swear we'll post something at some point. Maybe not worth checking out today, but if you're listening to this a week later, maybe there's something up there. And droidpod@email.com, gmail.com, if you want to let us know what you thought of this episode. We will be back with another edition of the show next week. This has been the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. What they throw.
You boys want to go to Dathomir?